on the Armstrong Show with Glenn.
And Drew.
And we are grateful for our patrons. Thank you so much for being a supporter of the show. Thank you for allowing us, through your support, to do community service in our areas such as Stop the Bleed classes, security training for churches and schools, etc. We appreciate the support that you give us. And, of course, you also keep the show on the air. And if you ever think you're not getting what you're supposed to be getting as a patron, please email us, info@trainingaz.com. We'll make sure you get any swag or extra cool stuff. Or if you have ideas on what we ought to be doing for patrons, let me know. On that note, thank you to the patrons who took me up on my offer to send me videos of them shooting and doing other things that we teach, all right? I don't want any weird videos, okay? That I could analyze so that I could send you responses to that. I really appreciate you getting the most out of your patronage, and I'm happy to help you as much as I can. Obviously, there's only so much I can do when I'm just watching a video of you doing something, but at least I can give you some pointers. So thank you to our patrons who took me up on that offer, and the offer still stands like forever. You can send it on Instagram. You can email us directly, info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to look at your videos of you performing a medical technique or doing a shooting something or combatives or whatever it is you're doing and asking for our advice. Try to give me multiple angles if you can. That really does help because I can see specific things, but I appreciate it because I like doing it. I love teaching. I love helping people. That's why I'm in this business. So if you're a patron and you want to know, freaking send it over. All right.
Also, hold on. On that note, I would like to know what the $10 and above patrons would like for extra content from us.
Ah, yes.
So that we could post it up.
Yeah.
So you're getting your money's worth.
Do you want, like, what are your show ideas for the extra shows? And also, like, do you want us to write stuff? Do you guys give a shit about blogs or articles or anything? I don't care, man.
I'll tell you something. We could do, like, monthly swag again because we were doing that. But
giveaways.
We were doing giveaways, but nobody – we're not really getting a lot of input, and so we're doing things, but then we have pretty low participation.
So we just kind of figure nobody cares. So let us know what you're thinking. If
do
you're a patron, you run the show, all right?
Right,
if you're a patron.
So do we need to post it up more on Instagram and Facebook to get the patrons to recognize this? Because I know not everybody listens to this all at the same time.
Yeah.
So maybe we should start posting stuff on Instagram and Facebook just to get them better involved with swag stuff or giveaways. Because we can get a ton of people to donate stuff to us to give – do these awesome giveaway bags, which we used to do.
Yeah.
But then in order to get into the drawing, nobody wanted to participate. And so it was like the same people winning over and over and over again because there was only
Which honestly I'm kind of okay with. Like if you're going to participate, I'll fucking hook it up.
Yeah. Whatever. Just give us ideas and what you guys would like to see as patrons and wanting to get the most out of us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, we want to make sure that we, you know, help you out. So, all right. Statehood Day, February 14th. So one of the reasons that I mean maybe one of the main reasons, I don't know, that I fell in love with Drew. So many reasons that I fell in love with Drew. But I'll tell you one of the reasons was early on in our friendship, before we were romantically involved, Drew told me how she hated Valentine's Day. And I told her, no way, because I hate Valentine's Day. The reality is, folks, I hate most holidays because they're over-commercialized. You know they're over-commercialized when it's Halloween and they're selling you Christmas shit, all right? So I fucking hate Valentine's Day for so many reasons. So Drew was like, yeah, you know, it's whatever. It's Arizona's birthday. I'm like, it is Arizona's birthday. I always celebrate Statehood Day. And that was a big thing for me, is how much I loved Arizona because of all the cool stuff that Arizona has afforded me. It's afforded me a great business opportunity. It's afforded me so much freedom to enjoy wide open spaces and hunting and shooting and all the sports that I enjoy doing. So from the first day that Drew and I started dating, we've always gone out and enjoyed Arizona. And so this last Statehood Day, since it is February 18th, of course, this last February 14th, we went out and had an amazing time.
Mm-hmm.
We went out to, and I encourage you guys to do this, right? We went out, we went out to the middle of nowhere, had a great camping trip, and we explored this awesome off-grid pueblo that's a full, like, has rafters in the roof and, you know, fully built walls, and you can climb up into it. It's really cool. And no, we're not going to tell you where it's at. Sorry, you got to figure it out on your own. But we went way the hell out in the middle of absolute nowhere and climbed up into this pueblo and had a great time and camped out and did some shooting, some long-range shooting, shot the muzzleloader, just had a good time. And then came home through Jerome, Arizona, and stopped at one of our favorite places up there, the Haunted Hamburger, and had some Statehood Day drinks and food, and then, you know, drove home back here to the Valley. So what a great Statehood Day we had.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time.
It was awesome. It was definitely what we absolutely needed 100%.
Yeah, you got to get off grid, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to leave. Like, there was times where you're literally in the middle of nowhere. We were so far back in the middle of nowhere that you could look for so far in any direction and see nobody and nothing. No roads, no nothing. And it's great to be reminded that that is an option out there.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love it. I love living out here in the West, big open, wide open spaces.
Yeah, and it was – we did a little – that night vision, little night hike.
We did a night hike. Actually, did a night hike into the Pueblo, and the following morning did a daytime hike into the Pueblo.
Wearing night vision, which was kind of –
always fun.
Almost non-benefit. So I feel like the last couple times we've actually been night vision hiking.
We've been out during very bright moons.
Very, very bright moons where you're like, well, fuck, I guess we'll just turn these off and walk in the dark.
Here's the benefit to night vision still if it's a bright moon is that you get to see farther away.
Like, yeah.
You can see right in front of you in a moon. But
it's also cool to turn your night vision off and just walk by moonlight.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
With no lights, which is what we did. Well, when we were coming down, we used our lights a little bit just because it's like if you come down, you die.
It's pretty sketchy. Yeah. If you fall, you might not make it out of there alive. So,
but it was really cool. It was a great experience. It was freaking awesome.
I want to share a story. We get tons of messages from listeners, mostly from students, about all kinds of stuff that happens in their life. And I want to share a story, and I'm going to, you know, remove names and details, and I'm going to kind of summarize a lot of what happened here. But I started getting text about a week and a half ago or so from a student, and this is basically what their message said. Neighbors of mine who were robbed bought some guns and are signing up for a handgun training class. And we talked about some other unrelated details. I'm just trying to kind of go over the terms. But what would you suggest in terms of training when an intruder has a gun and is looting your house? And then they asked if a specific class of ours would be a really good idea. So then what I said was, I'd start them with a basic handgun class. If they don't already own a handgun, they don't need to jump into advanced training. And then I guess they were home when this was happening. So they're asleep upstairs and they're downstairs getting looted. And they said that, you know, the dog, I guess that a dog didn't even bark at this bad guy or bad people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, wow, what a fright that must have been. Sounds like they need to worry much more about awareness and preparation in their life than a handgun. And then we continued talking and I said, they might need to change the way they look at life and the people in it. And then this is the point I really wanted to make to this student who's a very good student and knows kind of already, but I wanted them hopefully to pass this on to their friends or their neighbors. I said, yeah, it's not like somebody broke into their house because they, the homeowners, didn't have a handgun. How will having one now prevent it from happening again in the future? It won't. There are 4 Ds to structural security, and defense is the last D. Obviously, I'm an advocate for people having firearms and being armed, but that comes with a certain mindset and lifestyle. It's not a magic talisman. Those are the priorities of how you should set up your defense, the 4 Ds, deter, detect, delay, defend, which we've done entire shows about in the past. Most people skip to the end and just want to talk about defense, when in reality, the majority of defense situations can be avoided with the first 3. And then we went on and talked a little bit more about other programs. My point, and the point of me even sharing this with the group here, is this. Everybody always wants to jump to the end.
Yeah, they skip everything else.
And I'm like,
that's what everybody wants to talk about. That's what everybody wants to go straight to.
This idea of like, someone broke into our home while we were here and robbed us. We should buy guns. Okay, so let's say you would have had guns. You didn't even fucking wake up. First of all, someone got in here. Okay, let me even take a step back. First of all, you make your home appealing enough to someone to break in and loot it. Second of all, you left it unsecured enough, and I don't know how they got in, but you left it unsecured enough that someone was able to get in and break it. Third of all, you left it undeterrable and undetectable enough that you were asleep upstairs while someone looted your shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, if you would have had a handgun while you were asleep upstairs, it wouldn't have changed a damn thing. It wouldn't have changed anything. So what do you need to do? Forget about handguns. And now these people want to go take some handgun class with some fucking retard or whatever. I already had to have that conversation with this person about this, you know, qualifying bullshit experience they claim to have had to be an instructor. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole today. But like the point is, dude, why do people think that owning guns makes them more safe and secure? It fucking doesn't. If someone snickety snuck into your fucking house and stole all your shit from literally under your nose while you slept and your dog bitched out and hid in a corner or whatever and your door was unsecure, your windows were unsecure and your cameras didn't pick them up and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't have cameras? Oh, you didn't have lights? Oh, you didn't lock your doors? Oh, you didn't have security doors? Oh, you have security glass? What are you doing buying handguns?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do with this handgun? Oh, you think you're a fighter? You slept through a robbery. You ain't no fighter. You ain't no warrior. Your shit is unsecured. You left your village and your tribe unprotected, and now you think buying a spear is going to protect you? Like, dude, it just blows my mind. Like, the whole concept of this stuff. We're actually going to talk about that a little bit later in the show today. I want to mention something slightly unrelated about med kits. One of the most important things to do, and I've shared the story on the show before, I'm going to share it again. I was on a family hike years ago, and I was with my folks, my parents, and one of my daughters got bit by a bug. It's like a little bug, like a mosquito or something. And she's like scratching. I'm like, hey, stop scratching. That's how you're going to make it worse. And she's like, but it itches, and I just want something to go away. And then she goes like this, Dad, don't you have a first aid kit? And I'm like, yes, I do. And I pull it out. What do I have? Tourniquets, bandage, gauze, shears, chest seals, all the cool guy shit I need to deal with traumatic injuries. Nothing to deal with basic boo-boos. My mom, bless her heart, pulls out a first aid kit I made for her because she's a boo-boo person and not a trauma person at all. And she gives me a boo-boo kit and she's like, here, honey, I bet you have something in here. I open it up, sure as shit, I've got Sting-Ease and all that kind of stuff. So I put some Sting-Ease, a little Band-Aid, and then the kid's good to go and off she goes. That was a reminder. This is many years ago, but this is a reminder to me to like, hey, I also need to carry that kind of stuff. So in my, even in my trauma kits that I carry with me every day, in particular my AFAC or my ankle first aid kit, I put basic boo-boo supplies. And it was driven home again to me a couple weeks ago why I do this. We were out on a family bike ride, which we like to go do, and one of the kids took a hell of a digger right into some nasty sand on concrete, which if you've never slid through sand on concrete, you're in for a fucking joy when it happens. And basically just shredded his knee. Luckily, I have my AFAC. Now, what's an AFAC normally having? What's a trauma kit normally having? Tourniquet, bandage, gauze, chest seal. But because I keep some basic boo-boo supplies in mind, I also had some first aid cream, some burn cream, a big giant Band-Aid. Putting a little bit of burn cream and a big giant Band-Aid on this wound, and the kid's back in battle. And we're out riding and having a good time. The point is, don't forget to carry your stuff with you, even the basic stuff. You're more likely to have to use those basic boo-boo supplies, honestly, than your trauma kit, especially if you got kids, man. You know what I mean? Or you work in a, you know, dangerous environment or whatever where you're just open and susceptible to cuts and scratches and burns and things like that. You're more likely to use the basics of first aid than the, oh, my God, slapping tourniquets on catastrophic hemorrhage stuff. So don't forget to carry your basic boo-boo supplies. I'm not a big fan of mixing boo-boo supplies in trauma kits, so I always put it somewhere in the trauma kit where it's completely out of the way. Like I don't have to get through the boo-boo kit to get to the trauma kit, so to speak. So I just take like a couple Band-Aids, a couple Steri-Strips, some first aid cream, some burn cream, some Sting-Ease. I put it in my little boo-boo kit – or in my trauma kit, I mean, this little boo-boo kit. It folds up nice and tiny. It's nothing. It weighs nothing. It costs me nothing to carry it around. Don't forget about the basics, guys. Okay, on to some news, serious shit. Remington. If you haven't heard about the Remington settlement.
Oh my gosh, that's so ridiculous.
Remington, you fucking faggot ass sellouts.
Just read that the other day.
So here's what happens, by the way. when you allow gun companies to be taken over by non gun community, non-Second Amendment, when you allow them to be taken over by CEOs who only care about money, when you allow them to be taken over by boards who only care about productivity and profit, when you allow them to be taken over by people who aren't our fucking people, this is exactly what happens. Remington settled for $73 million with the families of Sandy Hook. $73 million. Here's the problem with all of this. I don't give a shit that the family's got any money. That's not my fucking problem. Here's the problem. My problem is this sets a precedence. This sets a precedence for every little fucking crybaby who is the victim of a violent crime. Instead of going after the criminal who doesn't have $73 million, who Adam Lanza is still available to do. Why don't they let Adam Lanza out? Let the families beat him until he's dead. I don't give a shit what happens to Adam Lanza. I don't care if he gets fucked to death in a gay brothel by fucking gay gorillas. I don't give a shit what the fuck Lanza. I don't even want to know his fucking name, but it's been beat into my head by the fucking media. And now Remington settles for $73 million. They sued the manufacturer of the guns used. One of the guns used, not even all the guns used. It's fucking insane. And this is the kind of bullshit we talked with Miles about, you know, the Kyle Rittenhouse case, for example, setting a precedence. Now we're talking about these kinds of lawsuits setting a precedence for victims who have a great victim mentality. That's why they're victims, to sue the manufacturer. So first of all, let me ask you this. Does the money make you feel better about your dead kids, you sick fucks? You sick fucking twisted fucks. Who do you think came up with this lawsuit anyway? Lawyers. Because lawyers are the ones profiting the most off of this shit. So now that you have some money for your dead kids, you feel better? Do you feel better, you sick fucks? What price exactly did you put on the life of your child? For every member, I don't even want to look it up because the details would disgust me. For every kid who was killed, well, I wonder what the family got per dead kid. I wonder if it makes them feel better. What a fucking sick, fucked up world we live in.
Yeah.
And this sets a precedence now for people to sue gun manufacturers for the crimes committed by people with their guns. The gun wasn't faulty. This isn't like a vehicle lawsuit where if some brakes went out in, you know, a model of vehicle and it happened over the, you know, 1,500 different, you know, situations where loss of brake pressure or whatever caused, you know, injury or death. We're talking about a person who took a fully functional firearm and went out and did horrible shit with it. The gun didn't make him do that. The gun didn't have anything to do with it other than that. It wouldn't have mattered what the kid would have access to. He was going to kill some kids that day. I mean, we could even talk about the Sandy Hook situation as a conspiracy theory anyway, and that gets us down a different dark rabbit hole. But my point is, this is sick, and it should never be encouraged, and it's horrible because it sets a precedence about what's going to happen next. And it sucks. I want to tell a story about something else that happened in the news. This was actually sent in by one of our listeners, and I want to bring this up because of the end part. 11-year-old... and I'm probably going to butcher this name, but maybe Chaska Smith dies at extended stay hotel right here in Scottsdale, Arizona. Found with significant injuries. Victim's half-brother was found alive, but also with multiple wounds and bruises. Both boys were in legal custody of their grandmother, who was arrested along with her husband, which I assume means it wasn't their natural grandfather, for child abuse and homicide. Hotel staff member regrets not doing more to help the boys. She stated, "Something was definitely wrong. I noticed the kids always in sunglasses with hats." Remember, this is an extended care. Or long sleeves. In 120-degree weather, they're in long sleeves.
Which I will say, we wear long sleeves in hot weather. So that's kind of like, are you working outside all day? But to kids.
Yeah, but you got these little kids in long sleeves, sunglasses, whatever. Our kids wear sweaters
to school at 115.
It's hard, but here was the point of the story is that the hotel worker's like,
we knew something was wrong.
I did nothing about it. And I did nothing about it.
Yeah.
I did nothing about it. I knew something was wrong and I did nothing about it. Remember that we all have that caveman intuition in us that tells us that the saber tooth is hiding in the long grass.
Yeah.
If you listen to it, you will be an old caveman. If you don't listen to it, you will not become an old caveman. It's important to listen to that intuition. I would rather be wrong when someone's safety and well-being is in concern, then not say anything about it and be wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, madness. So. Let's see. I don't think I have any other great news I'm going to talk about today. But Redwire gear moment. Get a light that fits your needs. Not all lights are created equal. Probably one of the very first things we do in every low light, no light class, or I shouldn't say probably, but everything we do in the first low light, no light, first thing I say in the low light, no light class, is we go over light selection. When it's handheld lights or weapon mounted lights, we talk about how we select them, what's important, lumens versus candelas, the type of, you know, throw, is there flat, is there flood, is there splash, is there spot, like what's the purpose of the light, how bright is it, et cetera, et cetera. Don't just buy a light. I heard this was a good light and buy it. I don't care what the brand name is. Do a little bit of research. Find a light that fits your needs. Make sure that the light is going to fit your needs. Are you going to only be – like, are you a cop on the beat having to illuminate, you know, 50 to 100 meters away and identify what's in someone's hand? You need a different light than your typical armed citizen who's going to be, you know, illuminating someone 20 feet in front of them.
Yeah.
Make sure you find a light that fits your needs. If you don't know what I'm talking about, we have this amazing low light, no light program you should come and check out. And we also have done some shows about lights. You can go back in the past and look
them up. I feel like every single time we do a low light, no light, people come out and they test new lights or they test different types of lights that they haven't run before but they've had.
Half the class is sad.
They are. I was literally just going to make that point, was the fact that half the class thought they had this big badass light because they spent so much money on it. But then when they go out there, and one of the first questions you ask is, one of the main questions that the instructors always ask is, what is this rifle set up for? Is it for outside? Is it for inside? What is going on with this rifle? And that determines on what light goes on there, because then all of a sudden you have spot, you have flood, you have all these different lights that people are putting on for different applications of the rifle, or the carbine, I should say. And so you get these people who have these home defense guns, but they have these pencil lights and not flood. And now they're like, well, fuck, I don't need this. Yeah. I need all the light.
I need flood.
Which is cool to
by
have
by far the shot's going to be and 7 yards.
Super cool, because I like how we do a lot of like the movement, and then we have the light where we walk up. Can you identify what that target is? And people are like, fuck no. But what's the application of the carbine? Are you planning on being at this distance at night with this light? And so it's all circumstantial. So it's actually kind of a fun process just to even watch, because I already know everything that's coming in the course. But it's fun just to see how people – it like melts their little brains. And they're like, well, fuck. I bought this light because everybody told me it was badass. And they're like, fuck this light.
My buddy who was in the Army told me to buy it.
But it's just funny just to see their little brains melt with different stuff. And then they're like, well, fuck me. I guess I could put this one on this rifle and then blah, 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 blah.
I would say 50% of our students after a low light, no light class
buy a different light.
Go buy a different light.
100%.
Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by Redwire Gear. com. Our topic for today, standard response within the average engagement. Excuse me. Here's what we're talking about here. Standard response. First of all, no such thing. Average engagement. No such thing. Like, one of the biggest factors that we deal with, and this is to Drew's point about what she was just talking about with low light, no light, is what is a someone's typical engagement, and what is going to be their potential quote unquote standard response.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of, you know, cool terms brought non-standard response, NSRs, and all this kind of stuff over the years of people really trying to focus on, you know, promoting this concept. The average engagement has often been quoted as like the rule of threes. It's going to be 3 rounds and 3 seconds, less than 3 yards. That sounds really cool. Is that applicable to your environment? And if it is, if that is applicable to you because you're a standard armed citizen, how then are you training for that? So as an example, are you using your light? Are you preparing for an engagement that's going to be less than 3 yards? Because if you're only training to go to full extension, and not mid-retention with your handgun, then you're fucking up.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any combatives training, if you don't know what to do when someone reaches out and grabs your gun, if you are going to use it, if you don't know how to use that blade that you're carrying around in your belt like a badass, if you don't know how to really fight someone when life is the prize, not pride, not dignity because you're defending your girlfriend because someone slapped her ass or you're messing around with some fucking drunk idiot at a bar. I'm talking about fighting someone that wants to kill you or harm you greatly. Do you measure up when those kinds of skills are needed? If not, you're not ready for what you might consider your quote-unquote average engagement. And where do you live? Are you mostly in the city? Are you mostly in the country? If you're out in the boondocks and you're going to be defending your home or defending your barn, you might be making a different type of engagement. Are you more likely to use a long gun, a rifle, or a shotgun? Well, what does your shotgun buckshot do at XYZ distances? What do your rifle rounds do at XYZ distances? Where do you zero your stuff based on your typical engagement distances? You know, it's always interesting when people are like, yeah, zero my red dots at 50 yards. I go, why? Now, I also zero my red dots at 50 yards, but I was asking, why do you do that? Why? Because there's a 36, there's a 25, there's a 100-yard zero. There's all these ideas. Why? Why do you do it there? Tell me why. Why did you pick that? The point is, whatever you're doing to prepare for the quote-unquote standard response and your average engagement, what, why, not what, but why are you doing that? I've had people ask, you know, I use an AR for home defense. You know, I use a 30-round magazine. Okay, why? Why don't you use a 20-round magazine? Do you not think 20 rounds of 5.56 inside of your structure is going to be enough? It sticks out less and it's going to hang up less. Well, yeah, but 30 is better than 20. That's true. 60 is better than 30. So why don't you get a fucking Magpul D60 and jam that bitch in there? Let's get a Beta C mag. That thing holds 100 rounds. Why aren't you doing that? Well, it's too heavy. Okay, so then why use a 30 then if not a 20? Why not use a 60? Why not use a 100? Like, I don't care what your answer is. I don't care if you use a 30-round mag. I don't give a shit. But why? Why are you doing it? Where are you? What kind of ammo are you going to load in that gun? Should you have a coupled mag? If you use a home defense AR, should you have a coupled mag? Well, coupled mags kind of – it's interesting things that used to be super popular. Like I'm gonna digress here a little bit, but like putting an extra mag on the stock of your rifle. If Pinnix were here, he would be laughing at me because when we first started working together, I used to carry around an extra mag on the stock of my rifle. Why? It's a leftover thing from – you know, military life, because I like the idea of grabbing a rifle and having an extra magazine on it. It's on the gun. It's not, I don't have to carry it anywhere. I grab my rifle, there's a mag in the mag well, the mag on the gun. So no matter what, I got an extra 30 rounds. And I used to get a lot of shit for that. People would laugh, you know, this is in the military, you're not on a whatever. Okay, I understand, but like, you understand if I grab my rifle, I'm proactively approaching a situation more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an extra magazine for malfunctions or whatever may happen, you know, reloads, whatever may come my way. I automatically have a magazine on the gun. Okay? We want to get rid of that. Let's do a coupled mag. Coupled mags were super popular in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, super popular. Everything from the ready mags that stuck on the mounted on the side of the gun to actual like cinch mags that used to couple the gun or couple the magazine. There were these cool little like metal plates. I can't remember what they were called. The cinches had like this nylon strap. There were like these metal plates. I can't remember who made those, but I got a couple of those still hanging around. The Black Hawk mag couplers, which had like a really solid base on them, and you could put two aluminum mags in them. Like super badass. Like I love mag couplers. Why do I like mag couplers? Because for a primary magazine, like Home Defense Mag, for example, there's two things I can do. One, I can have an extra magazine literally attached to my primary magazine. So if I, God forbid, need more ammo, which was a super fantastically idea, I could just move it over and stick it in. Done and done.
Yeah.
But here's the other factor. What if I need a different kind of ammunition? Like, let's just say let's just come up with a scenario here, that I have a need for ammo for soft targets and ammo for hard targets. Let's just say we live in a world where that might be needed sometime based on certain circumstances. So I have one 20 or 30 round magazine full of soft points for soft targets and another round or another magazine, I mean, full of, I don't know, 855 A1 or something like that, right? For hard targets. And now if I'm like, oh shit, this threat is X, then I can load the appropriate ammunition while still being in my fucking underwear in the living room.
Let's be real. You're not going to be in
right?
undies.
Naked. Balls out.
That is the most accurate description.
Very accurate. But the point being is it's like I can now select ammo on the gun. I don't have to have a kit. I don't have to have my loadout somewhere. I can just select ammo while it's attached to the gun. For me, that is my response. That's my average engagement. If you have a truck gun, you may have the same consideration. Maybe you're a rancher and your truck gun needs to be capable of shooting coyotes just as much as bad guys. All right, so loading a whole bunch of Full Metal Jacket up in it's probably not the best idea.
Yeah.
If you want to smoke a coyote, you know, out there at 100 yards or whatever while you're driving out to check on the cattle, well, then you probably want to have a rifle loaded up with certain types of ammo. Maybe you want to have a coupler for using some kind of magazine-fed system. I don't care if it's a Ruger Mini 14 or an AK-47 or anything in between. Maybe you want to have a mag coupler so that, God forbid, you need a different type of ammo. You can just move the magazine over, rack it, and you're in business with a fresh type of ammunition. I don't know why people fight these concepts so much. They make so much goddamn sense. So think about your average. What is your likely situation? We deal with the context of scenarios and real-world situations more in training than probably anything else that we talk about. I was just doing a training class not too long ago with a father and his son. And their two lives were so drastically different in how they live, where they recreate, what they do, even when and where they choose to carry their guns, even what they chose to carry, that just running them through the same exercises on the range was pointless. So I literally, in a private training class, set up one side of the range for the son and one side of the range for the father. It was like, this is the context as you've described to me. This is the most realistic thing for you.
Yeah.
What is your average engagement? There's all of this plunge into the target and shoot him to the ground kind of cool guy shit going out in classes. And that sounds great. Now tell me how that works when your wife is with you or your husband. Tell me how that works when your kids are with you. There's this, you know, bounding Overwatch cool guy shit that we do on the range. How does that work when your kids are with you? Have you ever even had that conversation with your kids? What are your kids going to do when your gun comes out in public? Okay, so you carry your gun. That's awesome. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate your idea of being a good guy. Now you're in the parking lot or in the store or whatever, and whatever kicks off, and you decide it's time to party, and your kids are with you. What's it going to take for you to A, join the party, and B, what are you going to do and what are your kids going to do when that gun clears that holster and you start banging? What does your average engagement look like? Is it the 3-3-3? Is it 3 yards, 3 shots in, you know, 3 seconds? Is that your typical standard response? And what is your standard response? Is it 2 to the chest, 1 to the head? What if that doesn't work? What if 3 to the chest, 1 to the head doesn't work? What if the headshot's not even reasonable or realistic? If you have a standard response to things, it seems like a good idea. It's like military concepts of tap, rack, bang, right? Immediate action versus remedial action. Well, that's great in a team-based environment. But in an individual operational standpoint, where it's just you in the parking lot against some shithead, and you have a click, no bang, and you tap, rack, and realize it's a different problem, and you just rendered your gun inoperable for the next few seconds until you fix the next problem because you just made the first problem worse by fucking not looking at the problem to begin with. Well, your standard response sucks. And your standard response will be whatever you spend the most time training. There's a big difference between informational programs and training programs, or informational, you know, exposure, I would say, and training. A one-day class, listen closely to this, and I teach plenty of one-day classes, so listen really closely here. A one-day class is not training. It's not. We call it training, but it's not. Mm-hmm. If it was training, we would spend all day in a one-day defensive handgun class. It would be defensive handgun level one, and all we would do is handling and marksmanship. That's it. And in day two, we would finalize marksmanship. And in day three, we would look at manipulations and different ideas about the application of the handgun. And then in day four, we would start moving. And in day five, we would complete some moving. And that would be a five-day handgun class. And we teach that in a day. Why? Because no one will come to a fucking five-day handgun class. That's why. So we put 20 pounds in a 10-pound sack. We give people a shitload of information. We run them through a bunch of freaking reps. We pile step by step by step the concepts and processes on top of them. But in the end, they still don't have a standard response. I've said it at the end of classes many times. If I picked someone up at the end of a one-day class and dropped them in a gunfight, they would more than likely do whatever it was they were doing before they showed up to class. Because they're not going to have enough exposure, enough training, enough time, enough reps to do that thing that we showed at the last half of class.
Yeah.
You fired 100, 150 rounds maybe moving. Cool. That's not enough. We see the same thing with like medicine, and I'll bring this point up a lot. We'll do like tourniquets, for example, in a med class, and people will be doing it. And, you know, we go through like 10 reps and we're timing people. We're making them do it sitting down, laying down in the dark, et cetera. We've got 10, maybe 12 reps in tourniquets, and people are obviously getting bored by putting on the tourniquet. And at this point in time, I'll ask them, hey guys, who in here does anything else? Like, who has a physical activity? Now, you know, who plays baseball? Okay. Who played football? Who played basketball? Who's a shooter? Who's a runner? Who does anything physical? Who types on a computer? Yeah, maybe that's all you do all day long is type. That's your physical motion. All right. When you go to the batting cages, do you just you swing at five pitches and then you're good? Because you've done 5 or 10 reps of the tourniquet here and you think you're fucking good to go. You throw a football. You threw it 5, 10 times, good to go? You go to the range, you fire 5, 10 rounds, good to go. You run, you take 5 or 10 steps, good to go. Of course not. Hundreds of reps. And you know it's going to take hundreds of reps. People go to school for years to get into a medical profession or an engineering profession or a technical profession. And then we try to teach them a useful real-world skill. And they're like, I got it in 36 seconds. Like, nah, man, you don't have a fucking response. If I started punching you in the fucking face right now, you would not do the thing I just taught you how to do. You wouldn't fucking do it. They go to a combatives class with Dave Bravo. They do a 4-hour class. They're like, I got it. I know how to fight now. No, you fucking don't. You've been exposed to some ideas. You had a few reps with some concepts. But no, you don't know how to do it. And unless you practice it regularly, you make it a part of your routine. You make it a part of your life. That's why we can eat with a spoon so easily, because it's a part of our routine. It's a part of our life. It's why we can climb in the car and drive down the road while we're barely even fucking paying attention. It's a part of our routine. It's a part of our life. I don't recommend that, but I'm saying it happens. Whatever it is that you do all the time repetitively, right? I draw my pistol now and fire the gun and it's accurate. I can hit pretty much whatever I want to. Why? Not because I'm magical, not because I have some innate ability to do so, but because I've done it tens of thousands of times. In this specific way. If someone taught me a new way to draw my pistol, it would take me thousands and thousands of reps to overcome what I'm doing now. I wouldn't just go to their one-day class. I've been to one-day classes where they wanted to change my content. I've been to 2 or 3-day classes where they wanted to change something I was doing. And by the end, it still took me conscious effort to change what I was doing because I was so unused to it. And I've when you look at like standard response, I mean, this is something I know I've told on the show before, but I'll say it again because I think it bears mentioning. When I first started running with Drew, and Drew and I first started dating, and she's, I'm a runner, whatever. And I'm like, I guess I'm a fucking runner now too if we're dating. And so.
And now we're married, so you're an indefinite runner.
Now I'm fucking running all the goddamn time.
Maybe I'll convince you to run a marathon with me.
Disgusting. So half's about as far as I'll go right now. But we start running, and she's like, my God, who taught you how to run? And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm just like, kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. She's like, I bet you get shin splints. I'm like, sometimes, boom, boom, boom. And she's like, you run like a fucking Clydesdale horse. Let me show you a different way to run. Now, I don't know how many steps there are when I'm running a mile. I have no idea. I've never looked it up. But I know that after 3 or 4 or 5 miles or 6 miles or whatever running, I've taken a few steps. And I can tell you this. It took weeks of running several times a week, taking I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of steps and specific conscious effort. For me.
I mean, you have to basically run by yourself at a much slower pace.
I had to slow down my pace. I had to watch the way my foot was hitting the ground, how I was holding my hands, how I was moving my arms, how my feet were hitting the ground, mm-hmm. how I was propelling myself off of every step. I had to stop listening
feeling
to music.
Feeling your muscles. You have to like feel exactly which
one of these muscles is
engaging. Especially when you're doing trail running. So think of... Even I would say it's even the same thing for playing baseball. When you're up to bat, you have to put your body in a certain position and you have to concentrate. Like, oh, yeah, they corrected me on this stance. Or it's anything that you're trying to become better at. It's a conscious effort to be really thinking about the position that you're in. One of my biggest issues when I shoot is I curl my finger all the fucking time. And it is a big conscious effort for me to really figure out my finger placement and really pull my trigger straight back to me because I yank and curl my finger. It is just, I only do it with handgun. Any other gun, totally fine. But I have this really big issue. So it is a full conscious effort. Every single time I put my pistol in my hand, I have to be thinking, don't curl my finger. Slow crush. Don't pull my finger or curl my finger. Slow crush. Because it's a big problem I have.
And it takes conscious effort to change something. I mean, like I said, you calculated all the steps I had to take over weeks of running several times a week. I don't know how many it was. Thousands. It was thousands of steps. And now I can run that way without having to think about how I run.
Yep.
And I'm faster and I'm more efficient and I don't get shin splints and all that other shit. But the point is, it took me so much work to overcome that. And even if you think, okay, I know how to do something. Last night I went out with a friend of mine. We went to the batting cages, right? It was like, the guy's like, how fast do you want to go? I'm like, 60 to 65 or whatever it was. Not even that fast, right? And it's been a while since I swung at a baseball, because I play softball a lot, men's slow pitch, drunk league softball. And so, like, whatever, that's easy. When someone is slow pitching softball to you, you have enough time that when the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, you can order food from the fucking snack bar and then decide how you would like to hit this fucking ball. I mean, it just is it's a meatball coming in, right? In baseball, when that thing's coming fucking straight at you, even at 60, 65, it's been a while since I swung at that. So I'm like, no problem. I can swing at this just fine. I'm good at hitting these. Here's what it took. It took me over a dozen pitches to find my groove.
Mm-hmm.
To realize like, oh shit, yeah. Now I remember how I used to swing at baseballs back in high school 20 fucking years ago when I was a pretty good ball player. And then once I figured that out and I got back into my groove, okay, now I'm nailing them again. Well, let's say that first pitch meant my whole life. I'd have fucking missed, man. It doesn't matter what it might mean to you. Well, if I had to, I could hit it. No, it's not like I wasn't fucking trying the first 12. I was trying and I missed a lot. And then I had to sit back and consciously go like, okay, hold on. How do I hit a baseball versus a softball? Okay, it's different. And then I changed my technique back to baseball and then I hit. The point is, if my life had been based on that very first pitch you get, one and one only, I would have missed. Because when you say to yourself, I could if I had to, you're fucking lying to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're lying to yourself. If you're fat, you're fat. If you're out of shape, you're out of shape. If you don't have the skills, you don't have the skills. It doesn't fucking matter whatever it is. Stop lying to yourself. Stop lying to yourself about standard response. Stop lying to yourself about average engagement. Stop jerking yourself off with the fucking bullshit that you do. Start training the way it sucks. Start training the way it's difficult. You know what a five-day handgun class? You know why no one wants to do a five-day handgun class? Because it's fucking hard. And it takes sacrifice. And by the end of day one, you're going to be like, oh my God, we're still shooting marksmanship. Yup, because you still suck. And that's why we're still fucking doing it. And we're going to keep doing it until you're so goddamn good you can't miss. And then we'll move on to the next skill. But when you quit fucking up, we'll move on to the next skill. But that's not how we can do things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about having private clients. I get to do that with them. I get it. When my private clients who train with me regularly, I get to do that with them. I'm like, today we're working on this one skill. And then we do that until they can't get it wrong. And then we move on to the next thing. But in a normal one-day class, you can't do that. You got to give everybody a little taste of something. And now it's up to the student
mm-hmm.
to take the training that they got, so to speak, the reps that they put in, and really figure out what they need to work on and then go further from there. It's important to recognize, stop making excuses for your poor performance and then saying, if I had to, I could. No, you can't. I appreciate what you could do 20 years ago in the Marine Corps. Thank you for your service there. You feel better about yourself? Now shut the fuck up and get back to that guy if that's who you want to be, or that lady or whatever. Because there's no easy path to having this standard response or this average engagement. What is most important to you? Like the story I told in the beginning of the show of this person, our house got broken into. Let's buy guns. Well, what the fuck good would that have done you, man?
Yeah.
You were asleep. You slept through a robbery. How do you think buying a gun is going to help you? You're focusing on the wrong thing. Your average engagement, your standard response is nothing like mine. So don't ask. Don't go to some guy, what training do you need? I'll tell you what fucking training you need. You need some training on how to fucking assess your situation because your house sucks. Your security sucks. Your dog sucks. Get a new fucking dog, a better dog. I don't care, a second dog. Get a security system. These people went and bought, I think, two handguns. Okay, so what'd that cost you? $1,200 plus or more? Plus ammo, plus you're $1,500, $2,000 into this situation. You could have bought a security door and security glass. You could have bought an entire camera system and a security door and some security glass. But that's not cool enough.
Yeah.
That's not the fun stuff. I'll buy a handgun. Okay. So tell me about how you're a killer then. Tell me about how you're ready to take someone's life. What are the rules? I don't need to know any rules. Okay. Enjoy getting butt fucked to death in prison. That's another problem we have. People talk about standard response, average engagement. When I was in the Marines, let me just stop you right there, Marine. Soldier, whatever.
Yeah.
Let me stop you right there with your rules of engagement. The rules of engagement are different now. You're a citizen now. You're back to being a regular old dirty civvy. All right? And fun fact, if you're not active duty, you're a civilian. Deal with it. So now we got to look at the rules of engagement for a civilian. You don't just get to do whatever it was you did back in Iraq in 06, man. You won't fucking believe what we were doing. You're right. I don't give a fuck either. Here's what we do now in 2022 in a very democratically ruled fucking society where pretty much everybody hates your idea of self-defense and your use of a firearm as such. So you tell me now, what are your rules of engagement? Tell me how that fits inside your standard response. You don't know, man, I fucking put two in chest, one ahead, man. If they fall down, goddamn, I'll fucking put a pile right in the fucking snot locker. All right, sounds cool. Enjoy getting butt fucked to death in prison while you're there for murder. If you don't know the rules of engagement, your standard response and your average engagement are nowhere near my reality. If people are breaking your house and looting it without you knowing, your standard response and your average engagement are nowhere near my reality or probably yours. Be realistic about what your average engagement's going to look like.
Yeah.
What's your – not the average engagement. Forget about statistics. What's your average engagement? Forget about standard response. What's yours? What does your situation look like? I'll give you guys some personal examples. This is what we talk about with students all the time. If I'm by myself, it's going to take me a lot to get violent because I can just leave most of the time. I can run away. I can drive away. I can get away. I can get away. Most of the time, if I'm by myself, I could probably get away. And I don't want to involve myself in someone else's problems. And if someone brings their problems to me, it's still someone else's problems. They're trying to make their problems my problems, but I don't want anything to do with their fucking problems, so I'm trying to get away from them. And I can do that decently as an individual because I am an individual. I can take a lot of paths. Now add Drew. How does Drew change my average engagement or my standard response? Well, Drew also carries a gun. So that really fucks up my plan. Because now if she draws her pistol, maybe she's got a different idea of how to handle this. Now, if we both have to run away, great. Drew's a great runner. We can fucking get out of here. But if she draws her pistol, guess what? I'm engaged now. I have to draw my pistol and engage, or I have to at least get myself in a position where I can see what she's doing and consider the fact that I may also be drawing my pistol. Maybe she's involving herself in something I don't really want to be involved in.
Yeah.
But she's my partner, so I got to jump in and party. How's it involved when my kids are around? Well, I ain't running anywhere when my kids are around because they can't run as fast as I can. And this ain't like a joke where I leave the slow ones behind. I'm not leaving any of them behind.
Yeah.
And what about my 76-year-old father with two knee replacements? Is his standard response, his average engagement, going to be the same as mine? What about when Drew's by herself? Or what about when Drew's with the kids on her own and not with me? Your standard response and your average engagement have to be based on reality. Yep. Yours. Fuck the statistics. Stop reading stupid faggot blogs on – wait, are we saying faggot again? I don't remember. Stop reading stupid, idiotic blogs. How about that? Or Instagram pages about you got to do this in this situation. In this situation, you do that. Okay. There's way too many variables in any situation to just have a plan of action and say, no matter what, when this happens, I do this. Except for a very select few. And here's what I want to talk about. Hard tripwires. In most of our programs, we talk about tripwires and how tripwires change based on what the situations I'm talking about here, right? Like what are things that trip tripwires? My 500-meter tripwire, 400-meter, 300, 100, 50, 25, 10, 5, et cetera. Like what are tripwires that catch my attention? All right, if something pops my 500-meter tripwire, it's some idiot yelling in a parking lot across the parking lot at somebody else. I pay attention, but I don't get involved. But if that's happening 5 meters away from me, I'm very much more engaged. Because I don't want this to explode onto my life.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it involves me and I need to pay really close attention. But there's a number of tripwires out there. Distance, how people look, how they're acting, what they're doing, et cetera. There's all kinds of tripwires. We don't have time to get into that too much, but you understand the concept now. Hard tripwires are the only preset, what I would call standard responses that I have. Hard tripwires means something is happening that is unacceptable in every circumstance. If someone walks up to me in a parking lot and is like, hey, bro, can I fucking ask you a question? I don't have a standard response. I have a pre-recorded loop, which is no thank you. Mm-hmm. If they break that pre-recorded loop, now I have to engage with them to an extent, right? You want to learn more about this? Come to our close contact handgun class. You'll learn all about it. But there's a pre-recorded loop that I use sometimes. That being said, there's this whole other concept of I have to engage with some people. Not everyone is some hostile threat towards me. But there are some hard tripwires that require my standard response of lethality. And that means I don't care if I'm picking up a rock, drawing my handgun, or biting someone's fucking face off. What's happening is lethal. I will fight until I escape or I die. And to give you an example of these three hard tripwires, so that you can understand what my standard response actually is in only three circumstances in my life. Here they are. One, someone tries to take me someplace. They are not taking me someplace better. Two, somebody tells me to kneel. It's because they're going to chop my head off and put it on fucking Al Jazeera News, and I ain't into that shit. I will die on my feet. Thank you very much. And I know most of you guys are like, yeah, because you're going to suck a dick. Tell me, what do you think that says about yourself when you think about sucking dicks so much? I'm just saying, I'll say that in class to people like, and I'm like, sure, think about sucking dicks a lot. Is there something you want to tell the rest of the class? I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about getting my head chopped off. That's what I'm thinking about. And thing number three, nobody fucks with my children. The end. In any of those three circumstances, I go from 0 to 100,000 fucking miles an hour. Like, they are absolute not happening. I die here or I get out of here. Like, that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people go, what about Drew? How come she's not part of your three? Because Drew is her own individual. Drew has her own gun. Drew has her own hard tripwires. Drew has her own circumstances that she's capable of responding to. So yeah, she's part of my decision-making process, but she's not necessarily part of my hard tripwires. Because if someone's fucking with Drew, if I'm across the parking lot or something and I turn around and someone's fucking with Drew, quite honestly, I'm going to get a really good angle. I'm going to watch the fucking show. You know? And if needed, I'll jump in and help her out. But the show is it's probably not going to go down how this person thinks it's about to fucking go down. Right? In reality, of course, I'm there to help her out, but she may not need my help. My little old wife doesn't always need my fucking help, right? She can take care of herself. So that's why she's not part of my three hard tripwires. But I have three very simple hard tripwires, as I just described. Those are my only standard responses. Everything else is anything goes. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I have no standard response. Someone fucks me, boom, three to the chest, one ahead, one to pelvis. Nope. That's not necessarily going to happen. What if those shots are blocked? Then I have to modify them. That's called a non-standard response. So that turns out your standard response doesn't work. What about average engagements? There are no such thing. My average engagements, if I live in the country, if I live in the city, carry a gun versus not carry a gun. Do I go into dangerous environments? Do I not go into dangerous environments? Am I a cop and I'm in the military? What's my job within one of those things? An undercover narcotic officer has a very different average engagement than a regular beat cop. And now take a beat cop in downtown Phoenix versus a beat cop in downtown Chicago versus a beat cop in, I don't know, Teton County, Wyoming. Very different standard responses, very different average engagements. So my point to all this is there is no standard response. There is no average engagement. You have a few hard tripwires that you cannot let, under any circumstances, you cannot let this happen. I don't care if it happened in a church and we were in the middle of a sermon and the pastor was preaching about God's word. If somebody tried to kidnap me or grab one of my kids, I would fucking kill them right there. Because that's not allowed. Because that's my hardline tripwire. My average engagement doesn't exist. I don't know what it's
going
to be.
It really depends on the context of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's really hard when people are like, I have this hard plan. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Yeah, it's great when you talk to people and you're like, hey, let's all kind of get a baseline plan to get an idea of like how to communicate with people, especially if you're in an environment that can take communication.
Did your plan even include communication? That's a big question.
Right. So really the most people that you spend the most time around, like, do you have a plan to communicate with them? Can you communicate to them without even speaking, like the hand signals? Do they kind of understand where you're going? Do they train with you regularly? Even if it's not training with you regularly, what about their significant others? Like, everybody should kind of have a somewhat baseline battle plan. But at the end of the day, everything depends on context. You know, if there's a way out that I can take the kids, I'm the fuck out of there. I'm not going to be some fucking hero and go and try and save the goddamn day. Not unless I'm pinned down and I can't. My only alternative is this. Mm. It could be different if it's just me. But if I have my kids, I'm not going to be a hero. I don't need to be a hero. I need to be a hero to my kids. I need to be a mom to my kids. I need to raise my kids still. Like, I still have a full-time job with my kids that I have to complete. I can't die because then they don't have a mom. So it's like you really have to think of the context of the situation and not putting your head on a swivel. But when you go into a place, notice the exits. Kind of come up with a baseline plan like, hey, if I'm here, give it a couple seconds of thought, maybe a couple minutes of thought, but don't let it eat away at you where it's like that's all you do when you go out is look for exits and constantly be looking for people and who's suspicious. You're going to fucking live your life of a misery at that point. Mm-hmm. Enjoy yourself, but take note of the layout. Go to the bathroom, find the exits on the way to the bathroom. Are you sitting close to exits? Just observe. Like you would normally do anyways, I would think. Most people should anyways. You don't have to have your head on that swivel, and you don't have to be like, well, I'm going to go left. You're going to go right. You're going to do this. It's all contingent on what the circumstance is. So again, baseline plan on what is kind of like a thing that could happen. Are you guys training in verbals? Are you guys communicating with no verbals and just doing hand signals? Can your partner read that? What if something were to happen while your partner was coming back from the bathroom and you're on the other side of the restaurant, let's just say? How the fuck are you two going to communicate if you guys are both down and can't verbalize to each other? Not down as an, oh my God, everybody's shot type of thing, but seeking cover or whatever it might be. It could be anything. And so it's just like those are, I think, the key elements that people really need to work on versus like the whole gun aspect. It's just taking note. When I used to work at the bank, we used to have a game that we used to play. And we were kind of instructed to do this. And it's to help build that memory in, you know, when a traumatic situation happens, you basically forget everything. And the first couple of robberies I was ever in, I forgot some key elements in some clothing. I forgot key elements in height. I forgot some different types of key elements. And when you have a group of people that witness the same thing, nobody's going to witness the same thing the same way, yeah. Which we've talked about.
Big problem.
It's a big, big problem. But you can actually train yourself just mm-hmm. like you can for shooting and everything else. And so when I used to work at the bank, we used to have to, anytime a person came in, we would have to recite their clothing, their hair color, their eye color, their hat, like the height. And again, so we had a height chart that when they walked in, they pass a height chart so you right. can get their height.
Yeah, same as
obviously
convenience stores and stuff like that.
Yeah, obviously that's, you're not going to have that everywhere. And I misjudge people's height all the fucking time. But regardless, you can still kind of train yourself to what people are wearing, what side they wear their watch on, what if they're wearing a watch, you know, their handbag, their shoes. Try to start getting detailed descriptions of just people and see if you can remember. Another good way to do it is remembering license plates. As you drive down, look at the license plate, say it a couple times back, and then kind of log it in your brain as like a memory type thing, not to be creepy or weird or anything like that, but it actually helps you when you're in a time of duress. It actually helps you remember certain things. We used to play the game all the time at a bank, and you never do it together. You would always do it individually, and it was one of the ways to sharpen your memory to really take note of what's going on and be a little bit more aware, because when you get robbed, you have to be aware. Even though there's cameras, we had some fucked up shitty cameras from the fucking 80s and 90s, and we are in the 2000 and... When I left the bank, it was 2019, and we had fucked up security. We had fucking tapes. Motherfuckers, don't think that you're going to walk into some fucking high-end bank and it's not going to be a fucking VHS, because let me tell you, and it was shit quality stuff. So granted, the camera actually live feed into the security place, but the tapes that we physically had were VHSs. So it's like, all right, you also have to be a good person to help aid in getting a person captured, whatever it might be. But that's a good, a little brain teaser thing that you can do to start really focusing in on remembering certain things. I'm telling you, I've been in enough robberies where I know you're going to fucking forget stuff. My last robbery was in, I still forgot stuff. You're never going to be perfect at it, but you can try to damn near be perfect and get as much detail as possible. And it's just even good for short-term memory. Look at the games that they have on the phones for short-term memory. They do little games just like that for short-term memory. You could just do big kid style and do license plates and people descriptions. As weird as it is.
It works.
Yeah, it does. But be an asset. Don't be a non-asset. And even you can teach your kids how to do it. You could teach your spouse if they don't want to carry a gun. Have them be an asset in a different way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not everyone has to carry a gun. And here's the reality. This is the last thing I'll say before we wrap up the show here. But it's a quote that I've used before, and I'll keep using it forever. If all you are is good at shooting, we have no use for you.
Yeah.
If your whole standard response and your quote-unquote average engagement all focuses on the use of the gun, we have no use for you. You have to have other understandings of the real world. You have to have other understandings of skill sets. You have to be useful in ways other than just shooting stuff. All right, independence training moment. Our training moment this week. What did Drew and Glenn do this past week to better prepare any of the four zones for an emergency? Teaching our people how to
be functioning adults.
How to resolve grievous mistakes, basically. Like if you make a grievous mistake, and I mean the kind of mistake that is potentially life-altering.
Mm-hmm.
We've been focusing on this a little bit with our people, our family. Some mistakes that have been made that are temporarily life-altering and some of them that can be more long-lasting. And teaching resolution to these problems, not to hide from your mistakes, but to own.
To confront
those mistakes.
Own.
To confront those mistakes. To apologize when apologies are needed. To rectify problems. To come out on top and be the best possible version of yourself that you can be. That is what we had to focus on a couple of times this past week. Remember, you can always reach us, trainingaz.com. Independence Training Moment brought to you by Independence Training. You can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. Find out how easy it is to host us or if you're interested in private training, either one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, and MRC Phoenix. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Remember to check out the other things that the group and the network does, not just the shows and podcasts that they have, but all the various different media and publication services that they offer. Next week, we're going to be talking about the 7 priorities of survival and creating a response plan with your family and friends. Primarily, though, 7 priorities of survival. Until then, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.